top headlines.
The Bees came back from a two-goal third-period deficit to win in Edmonton last night, 3-2. Nola Chari, Matt Grzelcyk had goals, while David Krejci had the game winner. Here's Krejci in the postgame.
You know, this one was, we were just taking it day by day, game by game. This one was really tough, playing back-to-back against a really fast team. So, get a win, it was a big one for us. Now we have a few days off, so we'll enjoy that and come back at it on Saturday.
Bruins, as Krejci said, back on the ice Saturday night in Toronto. J.D. Martinez in Florida getting his physical with the Red Sox today. According to Evan Drellick of NBC Sports Boston, the opt-out of year two in Martinez's contract was a tipping point in the negotiations and wasn't a part of the talks until late. Also, according to a Drellick source, Martinez has been told he will indeed get some outfield time. Julian Edelman posted a video on Twitter showing him running with a resistance band alongside a trainer as he recovers from ACL surgery. Other NFL news, the Dolphins franchise Jarvis Landry. Andrew Luck is not throwing a football yet, but he is throwing weighted balls heavier than footballs. Luck says the ship has sailed regarding a second shoulder surgery. Also with the Colts, apparently they are closing in on a one-year deal with Adam Vinatieri. Celtics set to be back at practice today. Brad Stevens will join Zoe and Bertrand in just under an hour at 12:50. Their first game back from the break will be Friday in Detroit against the Pistons. Finally, Lindsey Vonn took the bronze medal Wednesday in Pyeongchang in her final Olympic downhill. The U.S. men's hockey team lost in a shootout last night to the Czech Republic, ending their Olympics. Bruins draft pick, by the way, Ryan Donato. He led Team USA with 5 goals. Headlines are brought to you by Bill DeLuca Chevrolet Buick GMC. I'm Nick Kazlik's headlines coming up 12:30.
Touchdown, 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 touchdown. Patriots.
The home of the Pats.
Thank you, just like that.
98.5, the Sports Hub. They were.
Arr, matey.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know, I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Time hour, Zolak and Bertrand, 617-779-0985. Lamar Jackson, Peter King's got him going to Baltimore.
First round?
He says Joe Flacco's last 3 years, 20-22 with 52 touchdowns and 40 picks, meh. Time to look around. He said the versatile Jackson could be a weapon even when he's not an every down quarterback. He's got Mason Rudolph going to Jacksonville. He said the Jags will say all the right things about Blake Bortles and actually mean a few of them, but they've got to backstop the position. Rudolph should still be there late in round number one. He said Tyrod Taylor will end up in Miami. That's his pick. And then he has a pick for the New England Patriots.
Wait, Tyrod Taylor in Miami?
Yep.
So Tannehill and Taylor. Quarterback combo.
That's what he says.
Ugh.
He says, never know about Ryan Tannehill from either an injury or a talent perspective. Taylor will fare well under mechanics specialist Adam Gase. I don't think mechanics are Tyrod Taylor's problem.
No.
His decision making.
His field vision.
his decision making is poor.
So here we are in Brady's 18th year where the entire division is switching quarterbacks again.
Non-stop Buffalo, carousel, though.
Buffalo, Jets, Miami. Everybody making switches again.
Non-stop carousel.
It goes on and on. Hence the Shaughnessy tweet. Get ready for it. Tomato can division again. Man, it's unfair, but...
And...
Look what Miami's investing.
Peter King has the prediction about the Patriots and who they will draft in this draft, and I think that this name is picking up steam. That is Kyle Laletta.
Oh, yeah. A lot of smoke around him.
He says, I write about the Pats and Laletta later in the column, but this is a year New England has to do what it did in 2014. Find the heir to Tom Brady, who turns 41 in August. I can see the future now. 41. In February 2022, I'm writing this column and writing that new Patriots head coach Josh McDaniels saying, well, we know Tom just won MVP, and he looks great even though he's 45, but we've got to look for the future, too. He has Kyle Laletta.
It just made me pause again. We're covering a team with a 41-year-old quarterback at a not functionary level, a high competency, competing level.
MVP. I mean, MVP level.
MVP. The guy's coming off MVP.
Laletta
freaking here.
From Richmond. Okay, so he's got that 1AA, or if you want to call it FCS.
Yeah, the FCS.
FCS pedigree. The same as Jimmy Garoppolo. Laletta also told Pro Football Weekly that Patriots scouts have already checked in on him. Which now tells you, like, they're into this guy. They're looking at this guy. And, oh, by the way, as Jim Louth told us weeks ago, he also played lacrosse. And his father was a quarterback at Navy in the 80s. Like, this is lining up to be the pick of the Patriots.
He's the guy. What do you think the reaction would be around here if they selected Kyle Laletta with the San Francisco pick? Would that excite people?
No. Were we excited about Jimmy Garoppolo when they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo? No.
Nobody knew who he was.
Right.
Nobody.
Right. I mean, I'm not worried.
I mean, you knew the name, but, like, you never said, oh, I remember him in the Citrus Bowl, or you remember him against Alabama. Like, when Manziel came out. Now, Manziel played at Texas A&M. It's a big school. But you remember big marquee games that Manziel played in.
Yeah.
You
know, he was also Johnny Football off the field and all that stuff.
Right. But, I mean, like, I had, and I remember the draft when they were doing the Jimmy stuff. They had, like, the local news camera down in the corner of the end zone. The only highlights, they didn't even have, like, game film highlights to where you would shoot it up in the press box. It was, like, low-level camera action news stuff from, like, the school TV station. It was weird.
And Kyle Laletta, also a guy who helped himself by playing well in the Senior Bowl.
I'd love it if they drafted him with that San Francisco pick, because it would tell me they absolutely believe that he is the guy. Right? If you're going to spend a pick on a guy from Richmond at the top of the second round, FCS quarterback, they're telling you, we're not worried about the competition that he faced. We're not worried about how he might not have the big name. We think that he can be the guy, just like Jimmy G. I mean, you could argue you had Mallett, who had kind of the big name, fell to him or whatever. You look at them going out and grabbing someone like Laletta, that tells me they feel really good, about his chances of being that guy.
I wonder what Pittsburgh's going to do. I wonder what Pittsburgh's going to do bottom of second, first round.
Well, Ben came out saying three more years, right?
That guy, no. I think he said I'm coming back next year. It's always like year to year with him. It's just a feeling that Ben's closer to retirement than Brady is.
He is. Those are like I think that's obvious.
Yeah.
Ben's been talking about retirement every freaking year.
So if you're Pittsburgh, I mean, maybe they steal one of these guys ahead of you, is what I'm saying.
Good point.
We're your competition in the AFC. It's you and us. It's Pittsburgh and them. What it is, it's Pittsburgh and them. And depending on what Jacksonville's going to do, I don't know. See, Jacksonville, you can see, going to play a tougher schedule. You get more film on guys. They could have a year.
You're right. Why is it that Peter King will put that in his column, you know, about Kyle Laletta and how the Patriots have a need? Nowhere in this story does he say Pittsburgh has a need to draft their next guy.
I look at teams like right ahead of you that could
snag somebody.
Why are
they not getting that mention?
You know what I mean?
He even lists the Chargers, saying the Chargers need to draft a guy.
Because of Brady's
age. He's got Mike White as the guy for the Chargers because, you know, Philip Rivers' age is up there and towards the end.
And the Giants, Eli, same draft.
Right, Eli Manning. I mean, that's a known thing. But I don't see Pittsburgh in the story. Maybe I'm missing it.
I think it's...
Am I missing it?
I'm pretty sure Roethlisberger mentioned playing three more years or something like that. I'm almost positive after the season it came out that he wants to... Yeah.
Yeah, but he's no sure bet.
No, I know. I'm just saying, maybe that's why.
Right? But I'm just saying, go through that story. That guy's flirted with leaving. They should be listed. Yeah, he's talked about maybe not coming back the next season.
Yeah,
right.
Marquise Pouncey in late January said that Roethlisberger wants to play three more years. So he has Pouncey.
Until I hear from number seven.
Well, that's why I bring it up. It wasn't Roethlisberger himself. It was Pouncey who mentioned it.
Kevin in L.A., what do you got for us today?
What's going on, guys?
Hey.
First of all, just to let you know, it's currently 49 degrees here in the West San Fernando Valley.
Wow, so warmer here than it is there.
Yep, better weather in February.
That sounds like it's fun to say, though, San Fernando Valley.
Yes, I'm in the San Fernando Valley.
You know, it's really not. It's kind of like one giant Revere.
Wow.
love Revere.
I'm kidding.
Great place.
There's a hilltop there.
Yeah, but... I watched both Darnold and Rosen play a lot this year, playing at USC and UCLA. And I got to tell you, just a quick point, because I don't think there's much talk about the Patriots going after either one of these guys. But I think they're both going to be epic busts, especially Darnold.
Yep.
I don't know where they got in the first place that this guy was, you know, Heisman material, just because he came in at the tail end of last season and sort of pulled them out of the ashes.
Well, he had a hell of a year 2 years ago. I thought he had a bad year this year.
He did. Oh, he had a terrible year.
Every time I watch him play, he's thrown three, four picks.
Plan for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He
doesn't protect the ball.
He doesn't. He has a weird release. There's nothing about this guy that I think is going to be an elite quarterback. Rosen's good, but he just doesn't have the body.
Yeah.
And I understand Brady didn't have the body either, but this guy's no Tom Brady.
Rosen's got the narrow shoulders. He's got the knee braces on. It looks like he's out there on crutches half the time.
He's ready to break already, and he didn't play his last game at UCLA because he was hurt. And I'll tell you, you know what you're facing in the Pac-12, that's not NFL level contact by any stretch of the imagination. No offense to the Pac-12, but that's even low on the ranks in terms of contact amongst the college conferences. So these guys are both way overrated. This is the first time I heard of this Laletta guy, to be honest with you. In fact, I was on Google while you guys picked up my call. But geez, everything about that sounds like they took him right from Bill Belichick's mind and made a quarterback out of him. So that's interesting to hear.
All right, appreciate the call, Kevin. He's down on both of the top guys.
The thing about Darnold is he's infuriating to watch. Like, he'll make some throws where you say to yourself, man, that's why people are saying he's going to be the number one guy. He makes some great throws. But like Zoe said, then he has just a number of brain fart decisions and terrible decisions with bad throws involved.
Hey,
and you just, why the hell would he throw that pass? It's unbelievable.
617-779-0985. I want to ask Jim Lout, does JD on JD Martinez's jersey bother you?
I just saw you.
That upset you?
It just upsets me right now. I just looked at that.
Yeah, why don't we talk about that coming up next?
It just had JD Martinez on his jersey.
Continue with the quarterback calls as well. I see two calls on the board about Mason Rudolph. We can mix those in. We'll do all that next.
Do it.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Zoe and Bertrand.
A-Town.
Jim Lout, there are no other Martinezes on the Red Sox roster, so if JD goes with JD Martinez on the jersey,
Pedro,
you're going to be upset with him?
Yeah, it's not a good look. No.
Who cares? Why does this upset you?
Why do you have to be different?
That's tool bag. Yeah.
Not tool bag.
JD
tool bag.
Martinez.
He's got two initials that he can slap on there.
So if Price put a D in front of his name, nobody would say anything?
Does he walk up to this? Is this another walk up?
Do you know what JD stands for aside from just dingers? Do you know?
Can't play the other one.
Do you know what his name is? What the J and the D stand for?
No.
Julio.
Julio Daniel. Julio Daniel Martinez.
Julio Daniel.
Julio down by the school.
JD. JD Martinez.
Come off of that.
I hope he does. I hope he goes with JD Martinez on the jersey just to stick it in your face, Jim.
A part of the contract too.
I hope it is. You know what? I'll like him a little bit more. I'll start believing in the player a little bit more.
Maybe he gets a 2,000 square foot suite on the road when they go on the road, like the hotels. It's a big one at the Ritz.
Is it a superstition thing?
Penthouse. Maybe. This guy's going to end up bugging Jim.
What do you know about Mason Rudolph? Anyone? Anyone? Anyone know anything on Mason Rudolph?
I don't like him.
Why don't you like him?
When's the last Oklahoma State quarterback came out of that system and did really well in the NFL?
Hmm.
That system doesn't translate. Brandon Whedon was a first-round pick.
Well, Brandon Whedon was 45 years old when he was picked.
I hesitate with all those guys. Missouri, yeah, the Pac, you just, I don't know. Chase Daniel, when he came out of Missouri. Mm.
Who's your favorite quarterback in the draft, though, that you saw this year? Because you don't like Darnold. You don't like Rosen.
I loved Darnold 2 years ago, and I fell out of love with him. I got some issues with Mayfield, but I like it. I like the way he competes, because if I love Mayfield, then I got to say I love Johnny Manziel, like what he was coming out, because it's kind of a little bit of the same, to be fair. To be fair, if you're going to be fair and you're going to be consistent. But there's
Mayfield's a better passer than Johnny Manziel ever was.
Mayfield, who? I agree
Baker
with that.
Mayfield. Oh,
okay. I agree with that, but I just wonder from a size standpoint, will that hurt him? And who's going to work with him? Who's going to make that offense a lot like what it was in Oklahoma? He's had some big wins, and he plays with a chip, which I like, you know, but there's a little debaggery to him, if you know what I'm saying.
Did Bill Polian write off Baker Mayfield yet for his height? I'm just wondering.
Nope.
He wrote off Lamar Jackson, who's 2 inches taller than Baker Mayfield, but said that Jackson's too small, to play in the NFL. Dude, not tall enough.
Polian's the worst, man.
No, he sucks.
He is the. He just throws stuff.
He's
up
just angry
the
old man.
Just,
oh my angry God, old man. Polian.
Well, don't forget.
But
he
when
had
you
Tom
watch,
Brady pegged as a first rounder.
When you watch Lamar Jackson play, to me, he doesn't. The 6'3 frame doesn't. Translate emanate. I could see what he's saying where it looks like he plays smaller because it's
got a low release.
It's what it is.
The ball's like kind of whipped out like a Vince Young style, like
right.
Really low at the shoulder.
It's almost you watch him play. It's almost a bad mechanic. He's not mechanically sound. If that makes any sense. He relies on his athletic ability a lot. He's a damn good runner. He will get killed at the next level if he tries to play Louisville style ball next level.
You know, Jim told me a long time ago.
Yeah, but no one's going to want him to play that style.
I know that.
Like,
so
no,
you,
no
you
team
is going
to draft him and say, "Hey, do what you did here at Louisville."
But the question
say,
is,
"Hey, you've got
you
the skill.
Start,
you've got the skills. Yeah, why not?
Release level in that.
You think he's got the skills to play in the NFL? Do you think he could play the position if he was told, "Listen, we want you to stay in the pocket and throw the football"?
I think if Teddy Bridgewater can, he can. Yeah, coming out of that same type of system. Yeah.
Jim told me a long time ago, completion percentage in college. That's the most important thing to look at.
See, that's the thing, man. Man to man at the pro level.
What was it?
I don't know if he had a season over 60% completion percentage at Louisville. I think he was mid-50s 1 year. I think he was upper 50s another. He might have hit 60 at one point.
See, Mason Rudolph completed 65% of his passes last year.
Because to Zoe's point, if Jackson has to rely on his athleticism and he wasn't super accurate at the college level, are you comfortable with having him in the pocket throwing 30 times a game?
Say, I mean, you know, can he be Mariota? Mariota's one of those guys that could run, too. And I heard, like, the Jameis Winston compared. He's nothing like Winston. Winston's more of a pocket guy to me.
Oh, yeah. Winston's much more of a
Winston
pocket guy.
Winston played the pocket offense in college. I mean, they adapted it well to him. And I heard the Deshaun Watson stuff, too. But Watson, he looks 6'4", 6'5", when he's throwing. I mean, he looks like a pocket guy. And then that dude can take off at any instant. Like, Watson and the way they ran it in Clemson, it's a little more health to scale.
I think Watson can become
you know
the
I'm
best
saying.
Quarterback in the NFL. I think he's got that in him. He's that good.
I love the
he's
Watson
not there
coming
now,
out of Clemson. Love
but
him.
He could turn out to be the best quarterback in the NFL someday.
Billy's got the scheme to advance it, man.
Let's go to Carlos in Framingham. Carlos.
Hey, guys, so I just want to point something out about Mason Rudolph.
I can't hear anything. You got to get to a better spot with your phone or off the Bluetooth or something. Joe in Rhode Island on Mason Rudolph. Joe.
Big Mason Rudolph guy. The guy's playing four. He's played in four bowl games. You said it's 63% of his passes. First of all, you can't lump him in with Brandon Whedon. Brandon Whedon played with Justin Blackmon and Dez Bryant, who are two of the most talented college wide receivers we've ever seen. You know, he's in a conference that they play a lot of zone, and he's got to throw the ball 50 times a game, most of the time. I mean, if a guy is in a conference like that and plays in four bowl games, he's got to be a good leader. He's thrown for 13,000 passing yards, so they trust him to line up and throw it. The good news is he had no receiving attempts this year, so we don't have to worry about him going out in the flat. He's 6'5". He's an absolute monster. So, you know, if you want a pocket passing quarterback who rushed for less than 100 yards this year, let the guy stand back there and throw it. Like Lamar Jackson, I've seen him in all three of his bowl games, he can't throw that well. He's short arms.
He's not
a lot of interceptions.
Yeah, he's not a great thrower. He's really not a great thrower. I'm looking at Rudolph here. He played in the Cactus Bowl, played in the Sugar Bowl, the Alamo Bowl, and the Camping World Bowl.
.com.
Which he was the MVP.
Bowl. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a .com bowl in there.
Looks, 6'5", he looks like Milan Lucic. he looks like a hockey player.
He's got a little meathead to him.
I like meathead.
He's got a little,
kid.
He's got a little zone in him.
Yep, pull it. You know, you can put him back in his jersey. Meet Rudolph.
Steve in the car. Hey, Steve.
Hi.
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 Am I online?
You're on, Steve. Go for it.
Hey. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the phone call. Excellent show, by the way. But
we called you. Go.
Yeah, I want to talk about the magnitude of the Garoppolo trade.
Sure.
Gosh, guys, there's so many different angles we can look at this trade, but I ultimately hope Kraft for this trade gone bad here. You know, given that Tom is playing extremely well, the world knows that five Super Bowls and how many MVPs that he's gotten, but I was actually criticizing Tom for saying, geez, well, why don't you just pass the baton on to this guy and kind of become a mentor? But I guess, you know, he's playing well. I totally X that out. But I just want to hear you guys' analysis on the consequences of this trade here. I've seen it being tremendous impact negatively after Tom decides to ride into the sunset.
All right,
Steve. How are you going to keep both?
All right, Steve.
Talk about negatively impacting things. I mean, if you're that concerned with it, how do you keep both? Couldn't. It's one or the other. You're in or out. That's the league. You lost your 2 and 3. Same year. You had the best depth at the position for 2.5 years. Just can't do it. Can't do it at this level. You tell Tom, hit the bricks. You want to keep the other guy. MVP, hit the bricks. Bye. It's not going to happen. So you got a 2 back of what you invested in the player. So you go out and pick another guy. And develop him. That's what you have coaches for. That's what you have scouts for. That's what you have people on the ground talking to people for. I mean, you drafted a guy that didn't have a playbook. You developed that guy for 4 years. Why can't you do it again? If you have such great coaches and a great structured system, which you do. But you got to invest in a pick. Can't go pick it in the 5th round. Trying to find the next Tom Brady. It's not going to happen. These guys don't come around that fast. That often.
I like the kid Falk from Washington State. Same offense Garoppolo came out of.
You like a lot of people.
We got to get Bledsoe on talk about
him. He's 1A, though.
Bledsoe likes him, too.
I like him a lot. He's like spindly. He's got that like Brady frame. Like
who's your one? If he's 1A, you're going LaLetta.
No, that's what I mean. Like 1A, some LaLetta is probably 1B, I guess.
Yeah, they chucked the rock out there. I mean,
just being realistic, they're not trading into the top 10 and getting one of those guys. So after that, I think Falk's my guy.
Okay. All right. 617-779.
I want to hear Sosie say that for the next 10 years.
Okay.
Falk.
What?
Falk.
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 Falk. Grom.
Nice throw by Falk.
Falk. It's a good point.
Direct snap to
That's
Falk.
That's really a good point there. It's a good point. We'll get back at it after these headlines and cattle. Want to also hit on MLB's pace of play issues and the coward that is Rob Manfred backing down to players in baseball this week.
Go Felger.
Sports Hub headlines.
Bees with another win last night, this time in Edmonton, 3-2. Bruins 1 point behind the Lightning, top the Atlantic Division with a couple games in hand. Bruins back on the ice Saturday night in Toronto. J.D. Martinez received his physical this morning down in Florida, officially a Red Sox. According to Evan Drellick of NBC Sports Boston, the opt-out of year 2 in Martinez's contract was a tipping point in the negotiations. Wasn't a part of the deal until late. Also, according to Drellick, Martinez is expecting to play at least some outfield. Julian Edelman had posted a video on Twitter of his recovery from ACL surgery. In that video, he's shown running with a resistance band alongside a trainer. Other NFL news, the Dolphins have franchise-wide receiver Jarvis Landry. Finally, Celtics set to be back at practice later today as they get ready for their post-All-Star break finish to the regular season. Brad Stevens joins Zoe and Beadle in about 20 minutes. Their first game back, by the way, Friday in Detroit against the Pistons. Headlines brought to you by Live Nation. Jimmy Buffett, Fenway Park with Huey Lewis in the news, August 9th. MX cardholders get tickets now through Thursday at 10 p.m. RedSox.com/Jimmy Buffett. I'm Nick Cattles. Next headline's coming up at 1 o'clock.
Zolak. A little bit of badass, a little bit of salt and vinegar.
Bertrand.
Sorry, I said that weird.
Zolak and Bertrand. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Here on Zolak and Bertrand, 617-779-0985. I'm going to be upset all week at Rob Manfred. What do you think Rochie's going to say about Rob Manfred when he's in here tomorrow?
He's going to say, play ball. Get the popcorn. Get the peanuts. Dan won't have a problem. But here's where Dan is smart. Dan knows there needs to be some sort of a change. Because I think Dan's an old school purist. Where if you had one choice to actually make a lot of changes to where it's really going to start to affect the game or do absolutely nothing, I think Dan would vote to do nothing. But I think Dan's somewhere in the middle where he knows you need a pitch clock. You got to limit these visits.
I don't know, man. He's a
Christian
purist.
Vasquez shouldn't say what Christian Vasquez tomorrow. Said. You know? You got to adapt a little bit because you see the reaction to the sport. You see people fed up with the 4.5-hour games. You have the actual Red Sox announcers saying something's got to change here. Remy's trying to say, well, at least make sure you at least win it, though. He's right. Invest all that time. At least want to come out with a win. What if you're losing those games? What if you didn't win the type of games they won last year? This would be more of a problem than what you're talking about.
As a sports
you wouldn't have
fan,
got to 93. You would have got to 89 or 88. Go ahead.
As a sports fan, it's such a sucky feeling if you invest like 3.5. Like you watch an extra innings game for any reason. Like say if you get stuck, it's nasty outside, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And you watch and they lose. It's like the worst. You feel like you just completely wasted 3 hours, 4 hours of your life.
I agree. I mean, the Olympics are on now, right? And you'll catch it every once in a while. You'll flip over, you'll see NBC's coverage, and there it is. And you got the snowboarders. But it's like a race going down a hill, whether it's the half pipe or not. But it's like a slalom. And look at the action. Look at it moving. There comes the curling. Here comes the next one. Here comes the pairs dancing. I'll sit here and listen to Johnny Weir for 3 hours, talk about it, breaking it down, going after it. What's her name? Tara Lipinski? I mean, that's a big thing now. Like everybody's talking about them because it's entertaining.
Think about the NBA, right? Now it's about the three-pointer. Now it's about shot attempts. It's about getting up and down the floor. When you look at hockey, obviously fast game, trying to make some changes there as well.
But it's for the better.
How Bruce Cassidy's style of play has made this team so much more fun to watch versus Claude Giroux.
Yep. Right.
And you look at the NFL. The NFL is trying to address some of these things. It's not.
We have different breaks in game now.
Yeah.
Things are changing.
It's pace of play. It's speed of game. It is. Every other league is trying to curtail to what the viewer wants right now
they
to grab that attention. And yeah, you're right, Zoe.
We'll be sitting there in the first half. We'll be sitting there in one of the first halves and it goes like an hour and 10 minutes. I'm looking at him like, this game's moving. This game's going to be over in 2.5 hours. Nope. 2 hours, 58 minutes on the nose. Boom. And somehow, whether it's taken forever in that first half or the speed of that first half has slowed down or it's fast, they nail it. You'll get your 12-minute halftime and by the end of the game and the breaks are in right, they're nailing that sucker right at 3 hours.
And as Beatles said, you know, Manfred knows, everybody knows, you come out and you say what Manfred has said, like he's standing up atop the mountain ready to take everyone else down. We're going to figure out this pace of play. We're going to iron it out. We're going to make it better.
Something
and then within a couple of weeks, nothing.
So I think going forward.
Or not enough.
With Rob Manfred, I think that he should still stick to what he had put forth a couple of weeks ago when he said that the pitch clock would come in play for 2019 if the games this year do not fall to 2 hours and 55 minutes. Last year, the average game time was 3 hours and 5 minutes. There is nothing that stops Rob Manfred from doing that for next season,
yep.
If this year, what they agreed to doesn't work. If the shorter commercials, if the limits on mound visits, if it doesn't work, then you've got to bring in that pitch clock in 2019. And all you have to do is give them one off-season of notice. That's all it takes. You have to provide them one full off-season of notice before the change takes place if you want to unilaterally change things, which he has the ability to do now. So that's it. See how long the games go. And I hope that he, at the very least, even though he backed down from his tough stance on this going back just a couple of weeks, that at the very least he can stick to his guns on this particular issue that should have been expressed. Nope, guess what? You still need to get these games under 255. Because you know, I said so.
Well, what's just crazy to me is if they're having so much trouble with the union, like the players have to, it's palpable how long these games take. Like players have to feel that. Players have to understand
right.
that fans are not enjoying watching marathon baseball. the players should be right alongside the commissioner in the game saying, yes, we need these changes.
See, the response to my tweet where I was sort of poking people, too, with the Felger comment from yesterday, was, hey, dumbass.
What do you mean poking people? That's how you feel.
Hey, you dumbass. Love that. It's only 25 minutes from your NFL game. 325 was the average last year for Reds, but you realize there were 162 games to where the other half of those games were pushing four and a half hours to offset the low-end games that got you to the 325 mark.
And so much happens.
It's also six games a week versus one.
Right.
Yeah, it's also so much happens after the snap of the football. Again, speed of game, violence of game. They're just they're completely
you're talking about
different.
The gameplay during the game. That's different. That will never change, though, because you can't change the way you pitch and hit a ball.
I mean, UFC fans will sit through a five-hour event, but that's because when you see a fight, guys are punching themselves in the face. So it's you're watching something different. You're not watching guys scratch his jock and take 35 seconds in between
see,
pitches.
You're talking about minimal events in matches, though, too. See, it's like a big boxing match. You talk about it, you pump it up for 4 months.
Yep.
Why do you think people buy Mayweather? Because they want to watch the event. You'll sit there and wait for 8 hours for it.
It is to be a baseball fan, it is simply a battle of attrition almost. Like, you've got to fight through the season. 162 games. You've got to watch a game that is going to be average 3 hours and 15 minutes, whatever, 320. You're going to watch some of those games that last 4 hours and end up watching a loss. It is a battle of attrition.
The painful ones, too, are the early ones where you got bad weather, too. And there's nothing you can do about that. This is Northeast. I guess you could play more road games in April and all that, and you could work with that. But the brutal ones where it's windy, it's raining, it's stinging, and you're trying to sit through those.
It's just
brutal.
The pace of it. It's the fact, if you knew guys were going to be swinging at first pitches were going to be throwing strikes and the game was going to be moving along and the game happened to take 3.5-4 hours, you wouldn't mind it as much. But it's when the guys take every count to 3-2 and the pitchers take 25 seconds, 30 seconds in between pitches. That's when it's not the game. It's all the stuff that goes on in between pitches.
Does this manager recognize that? Does it seem like he's trying to, up things up? Like, I'm going with Betts. I'm going with Ben Attendee. We're trying to get Xander swinging at some first pitches. We don't want bad takes.
Yeah, I don't think. I don't think that's about time of game.
No, I know. But I mean, it just seems like he's trying to change some things. But it seems like. You got Chris Sale, too. He's your best pitcher. David Price at the end of last year, he worked fast. Like, why can't we get David to do that for seven innings? Six, seven innings.
Well, there's also
the obvious.
It's
a different dynamic coming out of the bullpen as opposed to being a starter.
There's also the obvious. There's a clock in every game, right? I mean, and when you watch baseball, how many times during a game, if I'm watching that baseball game, do I look at the clock in my house and say, geez, a 15-minute half inning, a 20-minute half inning? I watch the Celtics. I never look at my clock. I watch the Patriots. I never worry about the clock. I never worry about the clock with the Bruins. I'm not worried about, oh, man, this first period feels like it's dragging. I hardly ever, ever say that unless it's just sucky quality hockey. When you watch a baseball game, you're looking at it saying, man, this game's been on for an hour and a half, and we just got through the third inning. Are you kidding me? Now you have to invest. Like, how long are you pot committed for, right? If you sit there for an hour and a half through the first three innings, you say, this game's not going to get over. I'm going to sit here for 4 hours today. I don't have that in me. I'm gone. I'm going to sit around for the rest of this game. First three innings took an hour and a half. Screw that.
617-779-0985. We'll be talking to Celtics head coach Brad Stevens coming up next.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Bertrand, you guys do a great job talking sports in the middle of the day.
That's what we try to do here on a sports station in the day.
It's true.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Go to the expert hotline and welcome in the head coach of the Boston Celtics here on Zolak and Bertrand. It's Brad Stevens joining us now. Hi, Brad.
What's going on, guys?
Did you get a tan? Did you get some sun down there in Florida when you were down there?
Probably a little. Been fairly preoccupied while I was down there, but it was good to get away for a couple of days.
Pretty good moment with your kid. I know you went and visited spring training over with the Red Sox. You got a chance to talk to them. Can you give us anything of what you said to the team while you had that chance?
Yeah, well, first of all, I had no idea that I was going to do that.
Right.
I met Alex Cora coming out of their meeting and really enjoyed spending time with him. He's impressive, obviously, and is excited to get started and everything else. And, you know, we went over there because I thought it would be cool to be there on day one. And, you know, like you said, take my 12-year-old over there. I mean, those are things that are about as good as it gets. I remember as a kid, you know, sneaking in to places with my dad and watching batting practice and things like that. So that was a neat experience from a father standpoint. I didn't say much, you know, I just basically said how big of a fan I was. I told him why I was not qualified to speak from a baseball standpoint with a few of my baseball experiences, and then, you know, just told him to enjoy this journey, enjoy the process of getting better. And you know, one thing that was really clear and that you really think of, especially when you're in the middle of your season like we are, or even towards the tail end, two-thirds of the way through, is that, you know, everybody on that first day has that feeling of, you know, invincibility, positivity. You know, there hasn't been anybody that hasn't played, not played yet. You haven't lost any games yet. And there's a general sense of excitement and enthusiasm, you know, throughout the entire organization. And I think that the thing is, just whenever things are tough, that's a good thing to harken back to. That's a good thing to think back to, how you felt on that day, why you're doing it, why you're there, and be able to move on past those tougher times. You know, I think that was really good for me. You know, as we headed into this break, you know, on a sour note, and you know, I'm looking forward to getting back to work tonight.
You know, when people talk about the Red Sox managerial job and the job that Alex Cora just took, a lot of people say it's one of the hardest jobs in sports to be the manager or head coach of a team. Do you find that being a coach in Boston is harder than maybe it would be elsewhere?
Well, I think it's all your perspective on things. You know, obviously, you know, you hear, especially, you know, when I was considering coming here, you hear the great stories and you hear the stories that aren't as good. And at the end of the day, I think you just do the best job you can, and you got to be comfortable enough to, you know, accept the results, whatever those may be. And I think that's where you focus. That's where you keep your attention. You know, I don't get too caught up in riding the wave of emotions either way. And, you know, I'm really lucky to do what I do. I realize there's a shelf life on coaches. That's the way it goes. I think we all understand that are in it. And you just try to do it as well as you can. And I think that's, you know, it's that, I think that's a peaceful way of approaching it. if that makes any sense, you know. So I don't lose a ton of sleep over things I can't control.
Marcus Smart, you anxious to get him back up and going here, and what he's meant to your team from a grit standpoint?
Yeah, I'm anxious to get back and going. I met with him here recently, and just, you know, kind of talked to him about, you know, it is go time. It is not an ideal situation that he put himself through, or how it impacted us. But we need him to be his best version of himself moving forward, and I expect that he will be.
What's the biggest focus for you and the team coming out of the break, and what is it that you want to try to achieve in your first couple of games back?
You know, I want to get back to being a team that, you know, finds a way and does so because it competes at the highest of levels on every possession. You know, we haven't been a perfect team all year, but what we have done for, you know, especially the early part of the year, was we competed, we found a way. And I think that we have to put every piece of energy into that. We have to play better than we did heading into break. You know, as I said before, you know, everybody had the same All-Star break. So to say that, you know, we were looking ahead to break or whatever the case may be, well, everybody else was in the same boat too. The bottom line is, that's no excuse for poor performance. And we had a few of those heading into break, and, you know, we better play a lot better here over the next 23 games, because if we stay at the level we've been playing at, it's not good enough.
That's amazing. It's not really that long. I mean, just think about that. You know, 20 games, you're pretty much going to have a beat on where you're at, where you sit, and who you're going to be.
The sense of urgency better be really high coming into today. There's no question about it.
Cracking whip. I like that. Nice. Hey, but Al Horford talked about getting back to the things that started, you know, your sort of run at the beginning of this year, where it was defensive-minded ball, rebounding, It's easier said than done just saying, hey, let's go rebound better. It starts really with guys like that and, you know, the guys that you bring off the bench and what's a guy like Morris going to give you here as you get moving.
Well, we've had the nice part about this break is it does give you a chance to really assess your team. So we're able to assess it both from an individual personnel standpoint, how groups fit together, who plays well together, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that we all know that we're what we look like when we're at our very best. And we haven't been there as much in the recent games. Now, we played really good teams, and they had been playing well with great spirit and well-documented a lot of changes on those teams. And sometimes there is a boost from that, especially in the very near term. But I think ultimately we have to control us, and we have to do a better job playing to our strengths. And again, we've taken the time to really evaluate that. And if struggling going into break made us do it with an even more focused lens, and it benefits us in the long run, then that's a good thing. But we'll see. You know, that'll be something that we'll have to, you know, we'll have to go out there and play the right way.
We're talking with Celtics head coach Brad Stevens with us on Zolak and Bertrand. At the All-Star break, NBA commissioner had a press conference. Adam Silver hinted that the league may be headed to not having conferences. How would that look? I mean, how would you like that? Your reaction?
Well, I've never even read this, so I haven't really thought a lot about it. I know that it's been discussed in the past, but I didn't know that he had talked about it this week, or didn't know that that was something that was a big talking point. I think the biggest thing would be if you got rid of conferences, and I'm guessing you're saying that the top 16 teams would be either conference would play in the playoff.
Right, they would seed 1 through 16 at the start of the playoffs, and you would have interconference matchups.
The travel would be the part that would be the most interesting. I mean, you would have to consider, or you would think that they would consider going to a 2-3-2 format in all the series if that was the case, just because you could easily be bound. You know, we could be playing in California in the first round, you know, and then you're talking about maybe playing, you know, in the Midwest in the second. You're just all over the map in different time zones. That would be a challenge. I don't think it's undoable, and it's certainly worth discussion, but it certainly would be a challenge.
All right, one final question for you, Brad, and that is, you know, you hinted or maybe talked about the possibility of lineup changes coming out of the break. Will there be any lineup changes out of the break?
Yeah, there might be. We'll see. We'll talk about it more over the next couple of days. I mean, I don't think that that's as important as guys that are on the court playing well, and, you know, us all playing the right way together. I think so. Whether it's whoever's on the court and whenever, whoever's starting the game, whoever's finishing the game, whoever's in the middle of the game, you know, we just have to play better for 48 minutes. I do think that even if we don't change our starting lineup, we will look to do some tweaks to our rotation to help what we think would help some of our better players be able to manage the game better and take some of the load off their shoulders.
Celtics visit Detroit on Friday, and then they're in New York against the Knicks on Saturday. Head coach Brad Stevens. Brad, thanks for the time.
Thanks, guys.
All right, coach. Good luck here getting back at it. Go get him. Oh, he's going.
Brad Stevens joining us.
Sense of urgency,
man. Zolak and Bertrand. He wants a sense of urgency. Cracking the whip, as you said.
It's quick, though. I mean, 23 games.
That's it. 23.
Let's get to the headlines. Cattles has headlines. Get you caught up on things. We're back in 90 seconds, and they put a shiny object on the screen behind us in our studio, and Zoe is now distracted.
Look at the home runs.